Hi, I'm Michael McCoy. Finally got my act together, and this is Dice Made Me Do It on Legends of Tabletop. Thanks for having me.
Hey, everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
Hey, thanks for coming on. A little cross communications, but we're happy to have you rescheduled and on the show tonight.
It's when I'm on break from school, my brain just seems to shut down. I can't figure it out.
No worries.
This is episode 45 of the Legends of Tabletop podcast. We're going to be talking to Michael McCoy from Dice Made Me Do It about their brand new Kickstarter, Deviltry Station, Smoke That Skin Wagon. It's a fun beer and pretzels type dice and card game. Plays in about 15 minutes or so. So we're going to kind of tear into the guts of that and see what else is going on with Michael. And I also have Vince with me tonight.
Hello.
He was waving. I was going to point that out for the audio listeners.
I was going to shut up. I'm here.
So since you've been on last time, Mike, we've started a new segment called Something Cool. So, okay. What's cool things have you been involved with in this past week?
This past week I was able to get my miniatures out and start playing games again. I went on about a month long hiatus. So. Doing some work around the house and just getting my game on. You know, it's great.
Nice. What are you playing?
Right now we're doing Flames of War, World War One. Not a lot of people like it. They're mainly into the World War II, late war, you know, big panzers and all that. And my buddy and I love it. I mean, we have all the trenches and potholes and craters, and we love those old tanks rumbling through with guns sticking out everywhere. We have a great time with it.
That's great.
Cool. Also like to paint, so getting a whole bunch of my hobbies going again.
Nice, that's awesome. And yeah, and crazy good. that you'd do that right in the midst of a Kickstarter.
Well, you kind of have to, just to kind of clear things, you know. I've played the game so much, and I've been doing a lot of PR stuff and trying to get the word out there, get some more reviews going and stuff, and then all of a sudden you just go, you know what, from noon to four, I'm going to goof off and play a game. I need it. I need to just flush it out. So I only get a week for this break, so I'm going to abuse it a little bit.
Sweet. That's cool. I get that feeling. Every once in a while, I'll go on media blackout for a day or so. I'm like,
I've tapped out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Vince? What are you up to this week?
Pardon me. That was a coffee burp. Well, right before we hopped online here, I banged out 400 and some change words for the second Tesla and Malone novella, so that's cool.
Cool. How far are you into that process?
Ask me questions I don't remember. Which is weird. I just looked at the damn document. I would say about 85% finished.
No, that's not too bad.
Wow, that's really good.
Thank you. I have about 3 more chapters to write, and then I'll be ready to go to the editor.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Fun, but it's definitely a lot of work.
Well, it's the same with making games. You have a blast doing it, but you'll exhaust yourself. You got to kind of be careful.
You have to have a nap and a sandwich when you're done.
Yeah.
Or some coffee.
I went to scenic Pine Top here in Arizona last weekend and spent the weekend up at my brother's friend's parents' cabin, if you can follow that. We did a little bit of hiking. I did a little bit of writing. We're heading out to the Grand Canyon tomorrow.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, we'll be out there, and then we're going to spend a day and a half in Sedona, I think, on the way back. So looking forward to that. And then I have like a half a suitcase full of games and stuff I'm bringing with us. So try to get in as much play time as I can while we're out there.
There you go. If you have anything new, you can use that new sheet and do a review.
Yeah, actually, well, I have Sean from Thing 12 Games. I have Dice of Crowns I still have to review. We're coming up onto the wire. Their Kickstarter starts next month, so I'll be struggling to get that review finished before the end of the month here.
Did that sheet print okay? You said you're going to print some out.
I didn't do it. So maybe when I come back from vacation.
Been there. I worked hard on that. Fuck.
I actually had to work today. Hey, it's not often.
That you work?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I work about half the day, and then, you know, when you're efficient and good at what you do, then you don't have to spend the whole day working.
Yeah, would you say that on any given day you do about 10 minutes of actual work?
No, it's probably about 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours. And the rest of the time I spend on Legend stuff.
There you go. Hopefully none of your work compatriots are listening in.
Yeah. I think they know it. My supervisor normally walks in while I have the laptop on my lap or I got a book in my hands.
Nice. That's balls.
Well, you know. What are you going to do? Yeah, well, that's my thing. And I pretty much told them flat out, like, if you have stuff for me to do, let me know. I'll do it. If we're done with our daily stuff, then don't break my balls.
There you go.
Your balls are going to do it.
Mm-hmm. We've come to an understanding. All right. Well, enough about us. Nobody cares about us.
Pretty much.
We're here to talk to Michael about Deviltree Station. So we touched on this game a little bit last time.
Right.
Last month, 2 months ago, you swung for the fences. You came out with your first Kickstarter. It was a buy two, get two free four games with custom dice and cards and all this crazy stuff. Unfortunately, it didn't fund, which is not the same as it was unsuccessful, as long as you take a lesson out of that. So what did you learn from this first go-around?
Well, I definitely bit off way more than I could chew, and my first time I made a lot of mistakes through there. The campaign was very hard to understand. It wasn't clear, and you had to spend a few minutes figuring out what exactly it is. And I found that people in Kickstarter, they don't want that. They want more reviews. They want different reviews. They want a detailed how to play the game. Well, with four games, you can't really put that in the Kickstarter. And so it was just too much. I mean, I just went for way too many things. I tried about 10, and I would say five of the things I tried were unsuccessful. Three were okay, and maybe two were great. And so what I did was I took all that knowledge and then made the Deviltree Station Kickstarter, because even though the four-game Kickstarter didn't go, it still have all four games. And so, well, let's shoot for one of these games. And one of the big things that we do differently this time is the shipping is included in the price for the U.S. And so it's a no-brainer. If you want the game, if you like the game, you just pay and no shipping. And everyone else has discounted the price of U.S. shipping. So trying to make that easier for everybody and a little less painful, a little clearer for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's a big thing on Kickstarter too. People want to come in, they're looking for, tell me exactly what I need to know, let me make a decision and give you my money and get out.
that window I found is like less than 2 minutes. I mean, if you're lucky, it's over a minute. And so if they have to surf through things and it's slightly confusing, next, they go to the next one. And I can't blame them either, because that's kind of what I realized I was doing. And so I said, well, let me put something up there that would catch my eye and bring me in and make me want to devote that second minute. And if I can make that sale, great. You know, it's a wonderful game. It's a whole lot of fun. And it's not just about the randomness of dice. There's a lot of deduction and plotting and kind of figuring out what your opponent's going to do, and then does he know that you know that he knows, and then that whole Vincini line, you know. So you got to kind of watch it. But every time I've brought this to a new group of players, everyone starts with the Western accents, fake spitting in the spittoons. Everyone's having a blast. And so that makes me feel really good and you know, makes us think we hit it. You know, we really nailed this one, so.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the game. What's the overall theme? What are we looking at here?
Okay, well, the game is set in the town of Deviltree Station, and the idea is that this little location was a Pony Express station next to this really odd-looking tree, because the American West looks very odd and very uniform, and so they found this odd-looking tree. They set up a station, and then all of a sudden a town grew up around it, and you get the name Deviltree Station. The idea is the wanted criminals come in, they rob the bank, and now the posse is out to get them, and there's this big shootout in the middle of the street. So the game plays, either you can do teams, which is posse versus wanted, or you can just do a free-for-all, which is everybody just starts shooting and you're just trying to survive and get off the street. But what you do is you have a character card, and that character card likes to play one of four actions. And every turn you pick from those four actions, if you pick the action you like, you get to re-roll any or all of your dice once. If you don't, you don't get the re-roll. But because people know that you like to roll that, they can counter it. And if they play their action counters your action, so it's kind of a rock, paper, scissors, but we're going to add in lizard, right? Rock, paper, scissors, lizard. No Spock. We didn't go with the Spock. But if they figure out what you're going to do, when they shoot at you, when they attack you, they steal half your dice to start. So you have to be real careful when you use your action and when you don't use your action. You can't just do it all the time. Although sometimes you can get away with it 3-4 times in a row, and other times they nail you every last time. So when you're low on dice, and dice are basically your life, if you get half the person that's shooting at you's dice, that could be huge and throw you right back into the lead. So it's got a built-in recovery system. And then what you try to do is you roll your dice and you're looking for the same icon as your action card. And if you get it, you steal their dice. And if you attack them before they attack you, you can actually steal the dice before they even go. And the order of play is the fewest action dice to the most action dice. So you don't have to bet all your dice every turn. You can bet a few or a lot. But if you bet a lot, that means everyone's going to go before you and they may chip away at you. So you got to kind of think about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. This is the kind of game I like to play with my brother because we're always trying to outdo each other, outthink each other. Right. You know, it's like a different kind of chess match. And, you know, when you make the right call, it's always, I got you. Yeah, stupid ass.
The guy I'm playing Flames of War with, we also play a World War I dogfighting game. And other than when we pass each other, there's never a second shot. Because right as I line him up, he goes in the clouds. And right as he lines me up, I dive away. And we're both matched tactically that we end up canopy to canopy waving at each other and never pulling the trigger again. It's hysterical. But when you do finally get that shot off, it's amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. But a one-on-one dogfight may last an hour, whereas anyone else, you know, we just wail through them in 5 minutes. So it's the same kind of thing. It's if you know the person and you're like, you know what, they're going to go for their action this turn. I'm going to get them. And you can score big and jump right back into the game.
Mm-hmm. And so you have custom dice along with the other four games. These ones, so you've got a little outhouse that shows your action would be in cover. A little boot for moving, a little cowboy boot. Six shooter for shooting. You've got a little reticule for aiming. The horseshoe is wild, so it'll match any other one die on the die face. And you have aces as well. So can you tell us a little bit about the aces?
Okay, well, there's the four symbols that match the action cards. So when I play cover, then I roll my dice, I want to see cover, so I can steal your dice. The horseshoes match any of the action cards, so moving, aiming, shooting, or cover, that you've rolled. So any of those dice faces that you've rolled, you can match it. And that just gives you an extra one. Now, if you roll three dice and get three horseshoes, that's nothing because you have nothing to match it to. Mm-hmm. So that's when it gets really interesting is that you go, you know what, I'm going to re-roll two of those and hope I get an outhouse because I'm going to keep one horseshoe and I'm going to go with it. The aces, on the other hand, and that's just the absolute wild card. If you roll aces, you can steal a dice from anywhere on the table, even dice that they didn't bet this turn, that they didn't play up to roll, you can steal them from anywhere. And so usually if you roll enough dice, you know, one in six tries, you're going to get a couple aces. Theoretically, you could steal from your partner. I don't know why you would do that, but you could. I mean, you could take them from anywhere. Just depends if they're back-talking you, right? You just smack them down a little. You got too many kids with them, you know?
See, I would do that to my brother for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'll lose the game to kind of get over on them. Absolutely.
So the dice that you bet are your action dice. Those are the dice that you're going to roll to, you know, try to steal. The dice that you don't bet.
They're also the most vulnerable dice to be stolen.
Yes, correct. Okay. And the dice that you don't bet form your reserve pool. Mm-hmm. Those are a little bit more protected, but again, like you said, if someone rolls aces, they can steal those dice out of that pool and kind of leave you hanging.
Yeah, well, there's a couple tactics because – if I go after you and I hit the right action card to cancel your action card, I steal half your dice. So it's always better to bet an odd number of dice because it's half the dice rounded down. So if you have one die, I get nothing. If you have three, I get one. So mm-hmm. you always want to go up with kind of an odd number. That's a general tactic. But then there's also, you don't really want to go for overkill. Let's say that it's at the end of the game and I've got 18 of the 24 dice and you have six. Well, everybody would go, well, let's just throw all 18 in the action pool. And I'm like, but if he gets my action card, he steals nine dice, mm-hmm. which now puts him in the lead. So, okay, you have six. You're probably going to bet three or four, so I'm going to bet six. I'm willing to risk three outright to be stolen on a good guess. Then you have to roll, but I'm also rolling, so I'm going to take a few. But if you're winning, you also always go second, right? You go last because you tend to put more dice up. So if I put up six and you put up four, you're going to want to put up one less than me. So you always go first and whittle down my attacks before I start rolling them. So there's a lot of tactics to be done. Usually somebody will get antsy and they'll put them all up there, but I've seen them go out of the game doing that. So you never know. I mean, it's worked, and this one lady did it twice and took out two different people. And in the very next hand, the other person took half of her dice and she was losing. So it can really swing, kind of like a wild game of poker, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's cool because you have the randomness of the dice, but then you also have that, you know, that strategy behind, you know, how do I want to play? What do I want to wager?
Right.
You know, can I guess, you know, what card this person's going to put up? So there's a lot of things going on for a beer and pretzels type game or a filler type game. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's a misnomer because I guess it falls into that category, but it's something more substantive than, let's just take it out and play in 10 minutes. I mean, there's more to it than that.
It can be a lot more detailed and immerse it if you want it to be, or it can be really casual and fast. So you can take it to whatever level you want. I mean, you get three people and you go, you know what? Let's not do teams. Let's do all against all and just wail on each other. And it can be really fast. Or you get three people. One person says, I'll play two cards. You play one card each, and I'll take you guys on. And you can do that. So there's a lot of different ways to play it. And we've had longer games go 30 minutes, and we've had very short ones that go 5 minutes. So we like to make games that have a lot of different levels to them so that you don't get bored just always with one tactic is the best tactic. There's a lot of different tactics that you can go into. So,
right. Cool. And it hits right into my wheelhouse. I'm an RPG guy. So I'm not into like the super heavy board games or the Euro style games and stuff like that. Although I don't have a lot of experience. So I may enjoy it if someone, you know, were to show me how to do it. But these shorter 15-minute, half-hour games, I love it. Because you can just, you know, rip through a bunch of games at once, or you can mix in a couple of different games if you've, you know, got, you know, you play Deviltree Station, and then, you know, Scott's Mahola, and then, you know, Zombie Dice or whatever.
It's the same category. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Mahola has a lot of depth to it, too. I was with him when he first started testing it, and we were shocked how many different little strategies you could play, you know? You could actually throw the cards you want away to make other people give you more of them because they think you don't want them. And Scott started doing that to us, you know? So it was great. It's great. I love these little games. Now, I also like a good 3-4-hour game, but, you know, somebody has to go, somebody's late showing up, somebody's cooking dinner, all these different interruptions. That's where you pull out one of these. You start goofing around so you don't get bored, and then they come back.
Mm-hmm. When I was at PAX in 2012, we picked up a copy of Zombie Dice, and, you know, we were sitting at a little bar there waiting for drinks. I think we ordered burgers or something, you know, we played on a little tabletop, little round top, you know, next to the bar for, you know, half hour till the food came out, and it was great. You know, dice tinkling off the glasses and people looking like, the fuck are they doing?
Yeah. That's they go everywhere with me, as do my games now. Mm-hmm. I'll bring it. About 150 dice if you break them out of all the games. But I just bring this little bag, and I always have it. It's with my laptop, you know, because usually I'm presenting or something, and I can pull out any of these games. Like, how long we got? 20 minutes? All right, let's try this one. Let's do this. There's a lot of great games like that.
Yeah. That's when I go to my parents' house for dinner on Sundays. I take everything out of my little backpack, and I'll throw just a bunch of games in there. You know, we'll play Pinochle and, I'll grab, your game and Scott's games and, just throw a bunch of stuff in there. I'm like, all right, what do you guys want to do?
Yeah. Yep. It's kind of a no-brainer. It depends on what they did earlier in the day or the week or what movie they watched recently. They may want to do this one versus that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're great games. I like these short, fast games. I also like the longer ones, but we decided to kind of go for the short ones, the quick experiences that you can have over and over.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it harder to write a shorter game like that to develop the concept of that as opposed to a longer, larger board-type game?
To me, it is. And that's another reason why I wanted to do it was I like challenge, and I've been doing this for years. It's sort of like having a meal that's only one dish. If you hit it, it's great. If you miss it, it's garbage. So you have to keep kind of boiling it down and trying and retrying and stuff. And to be honest, Deviltree was the last of the four games we were working on that actually landed. And when it finally started to work and we saw multiple strategies being deployed was when we stole half the dice rounded down to start. The minute we saw that, it was great and everything clicked. But we got it to 70% or so, and then for 6 months it sat there and we could not get it over the hump. And then we figured out that one mechanic and we went, oh my God, now we're at 95. How did we do that, But it just took so long to boil, so it's kind of like making consomme, You keep boiling that water out until you get something that's really good and concentrated, and you go with it. Mm-hmm. I point to Steve Jackson games. I mean, Zombie Dice, Chupacabra Dice, they're idiot-proof. You can't screw them up, and they're amazing for exactly what they are. They're absolutely amazing. And right. So they inspired me, and that's why we started attacking these, was I went, how can I make a quick team game with a Western theme? And then it was like, all right, challenge is on, Because the ones that were just kind of all against all, those we have a lot of ideas of what those are and how to make those and what they should do and how they should make you feel. But a team game and a co-op game that's fast and dice, that was new. And so I really jumped on it and just had a great time with it. I had another great designer, Jason Leary, was helping me out. He was on a summer internship. He did an amazing job and actually came up with one of the games by himself.
Nice. Very cool. Do you think that going with custom dice is a little bit harder as far as, trying to work at Kickstarter things and price? And, obviously custom dice are very expensive.
They are. They most definitely are. I love dice, and that's why we had the company named Dice Made Me Do It. I love dice. Like, I go to PAX and I see the big Chessex bowl of dice, and I bury my hands in that. I know everyone else has, but I can't stop myself. I just love dice. So we decided to do it. It adds to a Kickstarter's bottom line for sure, because when you do custom dice, the setup fee can be anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 per custom dice layout. So in this game, And that's just to be able to have a mold. And then they go and they make bazillions of dice. But a card, costs you, let's say, a nickel compared to a dice cost you 25 cents. It's a big investment.
Yeah.
For what we like to do, it was worth it. I mean, we could have made Deviltree with normal dice because it's one six-sided dice, and you can just say, well, you want ones if you're in cover and twos if you shoot. But to me, that wasn't the right way to do it. It didn't complete that fantasy and put you in that theme and really give you something. And then the bone-colored dice, it was like, oh, I got to do it. So, yeah, it makes the Kickstarters a little harder, but the product you get, I think, is much, much better. So that's why we've been, going for it. In fact, Scott, I work very closely with Scott Hansen, and he said he's purposefully trying to avoid custom dice because of the expenses. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm going for it. And he goes, man, I hope you can go with it. And he goes, they just scare me because I don't know about, how much they cost and all the setup fees and stuff. But I think it's worth it, and, I hope to make a go of this, have a good time with it. The games are definitely fun, and everybody likes to see dice roll. And the minute they see dice roll, they want to pick them up and roll themselves. And so that's kind of
connected. Yeah, there's a magic to it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a tactile thing. I can't explain it.
And they look awesome. I mean, like you said, if you just had regular six-sided dice, it would just not have the same visceral, you know.
It would work, but it would fall a little flatter. Like, the experience wouldn't be as deep, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you say, as gamers, we like dice, generally speaking. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, the more dice, the better.
That's my point. Dice also make it hard to work with, though, because of the randomness of dice. And if you just make a game around the randomness of dice, they tend not to be very good games because you can't control that. And that's why we brought the cards into all the games to mitigate the randomness and give you some strategies, some decisions to make that are meaningful. If you have meaningful decisions and you get a bad dice roll, you go, well, that happened. But if you're only rolling the dice, you kind of say, it's not in my control. Why are we playing this? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And so you got to kind of be careful. That's where, like, Yahtzee and things like that come in, because you make a choice of where you put your roll, and that may affect what you can and can't count later. And so you have to come up with inventive ways of making meaningful decisions when you're rolling dice.
Mm-hmm. It's, you always hold off on that one chance box. Just you didn't want to throw your 6 points in there at the end of the game.
That's right. Six is better than zero, so you want to save it, you know?
Yep, that's for sure.
Yeah, I bet
you. We're talking about, you know, the dice and the tactileness and the theme and everything mm-hmm. else. So your illustrations, I'll let you say the name. It's Alexandra
Petruk.
Okay.
Petruk, yeah.
And Taylor Adele Smith.
Yep. They're both fantastic artists, and they both worked on different cards. In fact, I've had both of them work on all four of the games, except Taylor didn't do any cards for the Norse game. That was the only one, because Alexander was doing such an amazing job. I went, I want you to keep experimenting and playing with this. I don't want to take any. I mean, she was having so much fun, and she, I think she saved Loki until the last portrait, because she said that's going to be the most interesting portrait, and she was dicing them out to herself, kind of parceling them out, which ones I can do and which ones I can't. And then at the same time, Taylor was finishing up grad school, so she didn't have as much time. But they do amazing art. I know Alexandra is on DeviantArt, and I'm not sure if Taylor is or not yet, but you can go see a lot of Alexandra's stuff. She's doing a lot of crazy things right now. She's got a little bit of work, but she's using her time to kind of get better at different things. And I've seen watercolors and pen and ink and you name it. She's just experimenting. And it's something amazing to see every day. I'm on her Facebook, and I see everything. And it's great stuff.
If you want to shoot me a link after the show or during the show, I'll post that up in the show notes if people want to go and check that out.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, they're really neat. I mean, the portraits are amazing. The, you know, the cards have that, you know, like old poster. It's got the square nails on it. It's kind of curled and torn, and it really, you know, really plays to that theme, very nicely. It's really cool.
Well, we were we've got a number of stretch goals, and they're 4-card sets to basically give you other characters to play, but one of the sets is the Silverback Saloon. It's the towns. And we want to do those up like show bills. But basically, it'll be the same thing kind of nailed to a wooden wall, just like a wanted poster would be or something like that. And then we want to get the cavalry in there. We want to get Native Americans in there, some miners in there, some bounty hunters. I mean, you can just keep going crazy with these things and get lots of different characters in there, just so everybody can find characters they identify with and they want to play as.
Right.
They all basically are those same 4 action card character sets. And that's another thing that makes the game work, is if you do get 2 copies of the game and you play 4v4, each side has 4 cards, and all 4 will get played every turn. It's not like 2 of us could play shoot. There's only 1 shoot card, so you have to negotiate with your own teammates who gets to play the shoot card. So usually one person holds them, and somebody says, I want this one, and I want that one, and I want this one. And you go, okay, right, that's good, I'll play the last one. And so that's another one of those kind of social interaction things that make life kind of fun. And you can do some bluffing and some stuff like that. Well, I played this one last time. I don't want to play that one this time. Why don't you play that one? And they don't know what you're doing over there, but they go, oh, well, McCoy played shoot, so now so-and-so's going to play shoot, and we can do it. And you're just messing with their heads, you know, having a good time.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about, too.
Yeah.
So you're the for the Kickstarter, you're looking for your goal set at 11,000, which you know, might seem a little pricey from the outside in, but like you say, you know, having molds made for dice and things like that, and you got to pay your artists and all that kind of stuff. So it's so the base pledge is $24, gets you one complete copy of the game. It ships for free in the U.S. So you know, you're saving there. If you're in, you know, Canada, it's $14. The rest of the world, it's $17 for shipping.
Right. A pledge of the U.S. discount. So whatever the shipping would be to go to Europe or anywhere else, I just took $6 U.S. off the top of it. So everybody's getting that same benefit.
Nice. Cool. And $44 will get you the double deal me in. It's two copies of Devil Tree Station, so you can play with eight people.
And that's, you know, free shipping as well. So, yeah.
Yep. Get into a crazy shootout scenario with eight different people would be...
That's wild.
Yeah, I can imagine it gets pretty crazy.
I mean, you could do it with one box, but everybody would start with three dice, and there's not a lot of decisions to be made with three dice, right? You can go out so fast, and that's why we decided to say, you know, two boxes let you do this, and that way everybody starts with six. But that's not to say somebody won't do it and have a great time with it. I mean, maybe they want that super fast shootout, because in reality, when they did actually have these shootouts, they lasted seconds, not minutes. So maybe that's appropriate. You could do it.
Yep, all in. Put everything up there, because you can only lose one anyway.
That's right.
So it's not too bad. That's about all I've got prepared. but are you a coffee drinker at all, Mike?
A little bit. I used to like it in the wintertime.
Yeah. Hmm. I know Vince is a real big coffee drinker. He's got me. Yeah, he turned me on to French press.
Oh, yeah, I hear that's good stuff. I haven't had it.
It doesn't really take any longer, because if you're boiling up a cup of water, it's just like 2 minutes.
Don't boil it though. Don't boil. You don't want to scorch the beans. You want to bring it to it. I forget what the actual temperature is, but never boil it.
Hmm. No, go ahead. As I said, I found a fantastic cup of coffee. It's Bird's Coffee Company. You can find them at birdscoffeecompany.com. I prefer their Night Owl Roast. It's creamy. It's got a little bit of a cocoa molasses kind of flavor. It's dark and it's rich. It's just fantastic. It's what I'm drinking now, because I went to bed at like midnight last night.
Yeah, I can't do dark coffee at night. Cannot do it.
Oh, I'll drink this and still go to bed.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people do it.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me either.
What do you happen to be drinking over there? I see your coffee mug.
This is an awesome coffee mug from Cafe Grumpy.
I love it.
Yeah. This unfortunately was not Bird's Coffee. I don't have my blend yet. This was some swill from Wawa.
Oh, don't say Wawa. I miss that so much.
Well, you're not really missing. I mean, although I did have a hoagie, so the hoagie was tasty.
Oh, you're an asshole. So if you head over to our website, there's a banner at the top of the page. If you click on that, it'll take you right over to birdscoffeecompany.com, and you can pick up your awesome coffee there. It's definitely worth it. I wrote it down. Let me see. I came up with a little thing here. It's a small batch craft coffee roaster. So if you were to place an order today, it'll get roasted probably tomorrow or the next day and then shipped out. And when you get your beans, they're about as fresh as they're going to be, coming right out of the roaster. So it's a fantastic cup of coffee. It's a decent price. And Neil's is part of the crew here, friend of the show. So we hope you support him as well and check out the coffee.
Very cool. Very cool.
All right. So what else do you have going on? Anything?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I'm trying to get this one going, and then summer school's starting up, so I'm going to start getting that going. We've been putting in more vegetable gardens in the back. I've been doing spices. That's my thing. And we've been having a good old time. We have a record cold. The temperature right now, I think tonight's going to be in the 50s. And that stops in March in Texas, and we would already be in the 90s. And I want to say we've had one 90-degree day, so we were predicted to have a very cool summer, and so far it's true. But today high was 65 with rain and blowing wind. So, you know, I'm wearing shorts, and I'm freaking out. It's like, no, this is not right. It's definitely the coldest we've had it here in a while, and I'm from Louisiana. I don't like hot ever. And then I lived in Montreal and Columbus, Ohio for a while. So for me, snow, cold, I love it. So it's good, but I know it's coming. I know the heat's on its way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been in the 90s here already. I think today was only about 86, but yeah we're hitting those temperatures now. I've had the air on for a couple of weeks already.
Yeah. Well, we just put in a new screen door because our Great Dane went through the old one. So we had to put a security screen door, right, where the screen is metal. Mm. And it's got little, like, decorative bars in front. Not because we're worried. We live in a great neighborhood just to keep the damn dog inside, you know? He got to where he got a running start, and he would dive through the hole that he had made. And at 130 pounds, you're not going to stop him if you don't want to be stopped. So, rotten animal.
Oh boy, I bet that was a surprise the first time.
Very much so.
Oh man, so give us a web address real quick. We'll get that out. It's there.
www.dicemademedoit.com is our web address, and on there there's a link to the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter ones are very nebulous, but you can go on Kickstarter and just type Devil Tree Station, and it'll come up.
You could go to Legends of Tabletop and check out our review of Devil Tree Station. There's a link on there as well. It'll take you right to the Kickstarter.
And the Kickstarter has links to all these other reviews. So they can come to the Kickstarter and then go to your place. And I actually have a link now to a Italian review. And I had to have Google translate it. So then I was trying to get a few captions out of it, just a few bits, you know, people who don't want to go. And the translation is horrible, so I just apologize right out. I apologize for the translation, but they talk about the things like the bluffing and the randomness mitigation and things like that. And so they had a good time with it, too. Bearded Meeple has a review of it as well, besides you guys. So, yeah, there's a lot of reviews up there to take a look at, because Kickstarter is a buyer beware environment. You know, you better do your research. Make sure you're getting is good.
Yeah. And your Twitter handle, you want to throw that out there as well?
Dice Made Me Do It as well. Everything is Dice Made Me Do It. We've got a Facebook page. We've got a Twitter page. We try to get out there and put things out. And when I get new reviews, new information, I'll throw it out there and just keep the information flowing. That's the big thing about Kickstarter, is making people aware that you're there, because there's so many good games and good things on Kickstarter. You can get buried, you know, just because of the competition.
Yep. You could also go in there and spend a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
I went through that in the very beginning. I'm like, oh, this is great. I want that, and I want this, and I'm going to order that. Yep. And then my bill came, and I was like, oh, I forgot I ordered all that stuff.
That's right. And then you have to wait for it. So it's a delayed gratification thing. You got to be real careful, because you'll forget that all this is coming. Well, I had something show up today, and I went, Poland? Why am I getting something from Poland? Sure enough, it was something that I'd ordered, and it was great. It was fantastic.
That's cool. Yeah. Kind of I got a little note from the post office a couple of weeks ago, and it said I had a letter, and I'm like, a letter? What the fuck is a letter? It's my ex sending me something through the lawyer. Like, what the hell is going on?
In trouble.
I go down there, I pick it up. It's just like a little package. I'm like, what the? I know what this is. I ordered glow in the dark dice. I forget what the friggin' name of the company was. Space Roller Dice.
Yeah.
And so I use them for my Battletech game. Now I leave them in the windowsill, let them charge all day for when my brother comes home, and then I turn the light off real quick. I'm like, I want to roll real quick.
Three rolls, you know, and it goes dead.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that's fine. Yeah, I love it, because these little presents show up periodically, and they're great.
I ordered a two dragon sheets from Dogmite Games, and you know, they're shipping them out a little bit at a time. I got an email update, so mine's supposed to ship in September.
Oh, so you're way down on the list, huh?
Well, I put the order in like towards the very end of the Kickstarter, so I kind of figured. But when I saw it in black and white, I was like, "Damn."
Yeah, yeah. I just got into a World War II card game, and it went over. I want to say it cleared 125,000. It was really big, but I'm dying to get it. I'm dying to get it. It's supposed to be a really detailed game with tactics, and you go out on your mission, and you have your objective, but things happen on the way, and you've got player character soldiers and NPCs and then squad mates, and I can't wait for it to show up. So,
yeah, that sounds like a fun game.
Yeah. When they started adding, for the stretch goals, they added Russian, and they added the Polish, and then they added the British, and so you got Germans, Americans, British, Russian, Polish. I assume because they want to do the whole early war, Operation Barbarossa, do all that, and then eventually I'm like, I'm already sending them emails. You're going to do Italians? You're going to do French? When are these coming out? You know, can't wait. I'm just such a game junkie. The mechanics looked very interesting, so that's where I get in trouble. Even if I never play it, I'll read the instructions 10 or 12 times and learn it because I have to know how it works.
Right.
And I'll get so much pleasure out of that. And then if I play it once or twice, well, that's a bonus, you know.
Now, I know we asked you last time, do you have a regular group that you wind up playing with or no?
I've had regular groups before. My buddy Wayne Appleby that I'm doing the Flames of War with, he's run a Wings of War, World War One, where we had a whole campaign. He did a Flames of War campaign. I do War Machine and Hordes periodically. But lately, I've been so swamped with work, I haven't been able to do anything regularly. Star Wars Armada, Star Wars X-Wing, you know, any of those dogfighting games, I'm a sucker for them. I got to play them.
Sorry,
and then my son wants us to start up a D&D group, so I'm hoping to do that with him. That would be a blast.
Nice. That's what I was going to ask you. Is, are you more oriented towards miniatures, game, skirmish type stuff, or do you get into the more RPG stuff?
I'm into all games. It's crazy. I take a medieval sword class, so that's kind of like SCA almost, right? But this is the actual martial art, how they fought, what they did and stuff. So it's like I want to experience it. I want to play it. I'm in my office right now, and I've got a whole shelf that is just RPGs. Nice. Vampire. I've got a ton of stuff from Shane Hensley. He's really great. When I told him I wanted to use some stuff in a class, he sent me this box that had 30-some-odd books in it, all these different games. A long D&D fan. I had the original red and blue boxes, and then the original advanced rules with the big demon on the front, you know, and I did the DM for that, stuff like that. I love them all. I've got a lot of superhero RPGs. I just like the mechanics, and I tear them apart and learn so much from them that I'll buy RPGs without ever playing them, but I'm still tearing them apart, doing my thing.
And most of the books have a lot of good fluff in them, too, so even if you don't get the chance to read them, you're still getting that world creation and background and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. My son plays a lot of the miniature games with me, so he's been running a D&D group, and then my daughter played it when she was home on Christmas break and had so much fun. She's been video joining them every Sunday from Georgia at college.
Nice.
And she's one of those people that said, I'm not going to play D&D. Geeks play that. What are you talking about? I'm not. That's no fun. And then she played it once and went, oh, my God, I love it, you know. So she brings reason and negotiation and a whole lot of bartering and kind of verbal tactics, whereas the guys just go, I stab him in the eye, I'm done. And she's like, She's kind of the mother hen in the group. But my son wants to run a game with her and me and my wife and maybe a couple other family members, and you know, maybe only play once a month, but I really look forward to doing that. So
That's usually my time schedules, about once a month for a game. We started playing a Fear Itself campaign. It's been going for, I guess, about 3 months now, And that's a lot of fun. It's meant to be more of a one-shot horror slasher kind of thing. It's Gumshoe System from Pelgrim Press. But, you know, we're kind of dialing it back a little bit so the characters survive. Although I haven't been able to make a stability roll, I don't think not one the whole time we've been playing.
you need some new dice.
That's right.
I sit down. Here, let me get them. This is not going to work for anybody who winds up listening to this later. But
you can describe them in detail.
I've got a makeup bag. This is all D6s.
What did you do with your makeup?
It's from the X. And then I've got, this is everything else. D10s, D20s, yeah. D4s.
And when you roll
when
back,
I sit down to play,
dice, right? And you grab new.
It's crazy.
I do the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like Flames of War. I can make all my rolls until it comes time to wound somebody. Nope, I'm going to fail that. But I'll hit 50 people. Well, but I can't hurt anybody. My buddy just laughs. That's all he does.
Well, that's the last Battletech game we just finished. I just completely annihilated my brother. We play with about, I think we do 20 mechs, and we do like campaign style. So we have a huge setup. People can go to our Instagram, check it out. I post pictures up over there. Wow. I just posted some stuff up on Facebook. And I wound up finishing the game with 9 mechs. He had none, obviously. And his dice for a month and a half were just absolutely hard. Yeah. He would need a 5 to hit, and he would roll a 4. It was just terrible. So
it's like you're going to hit on a 5 up on a 20-sided dice, so you roll 3 20s. And then you're like, okay, now I need 8 or up to hurt you. And so you roll 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4. And you're like, I couldn't have used some of that luck earlier. I mean, come on. I do it all the time. But I like the games where they're drawn out. Like when we do the World War I planes, you deal out 8 machine gun cards to each gun on every plane, and that's what you're going to shoot. So if you're at long range, you give them the top card, and you only get 8 shots. Then you're out of cards. You have to go reload, go land. But if you get the short range, you give them a top card and a card from the deck for free because you do more damage at short range. And I've looked at my 8 cards on my planes more than once. There's not enough points in it to take down a plane, period. And I'm like, 0, jam, jam, 0, 1, 1, 1, 2. Add that up. I can't even hurt your plane. You know? It's just the cards you were dealt. You know, you got to deal with it. So
yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I like that. I don't mind losing if you have a good experience. And the experience was, well, I went up and it wasn't my day, but I survived and that was a victory, you know? So I love games like that. I think as you get older, you don't mind losing as long as there's a good story, there's a good experience. You're like, I'll lose every darn game because I usually do. I suck at playing games. I'm pretty good at making them, but I can't play them to save my life. I lose all the time.
I hate losing. I especially when it's my brother because we're just so...
Well, that's the sibling rivalry.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not only that, but Jeff is just so laissez-faire about most of the games. He doesn't... It's just like, oh, well, it's like not serious. So you're like, fuck, you're so serious. You're like, I have to win. It's like, I've invested more. I deserve to win.
That's right. You're crushing me and you don't give a shit. This is killing me. Yeah. You know?
You don't even care. You're killing me. Fuck.
Well, he's in the battle. So I was running a home game D&D here, and it came to the point, and he got married, and you know whatever, and he likes to go shoot, and they go quad and all that stuff, and he was like, "Look, I would rather play Battletech than D&D." So he left the D&D group, which eventually, you know, wound up falling apart just because of time constraints. But, you know, I get him every Friday. He comes over, and he'll come over for dinner, and we'll eat real quick. And I'm like, all right, hurry up. We got to get back there and, you know, start pounding on each other.
Yeah, games are like that. They can be these wonderful experiences.
Yep. It's definitely I'm so glad that my daughter's approaching at least a little bit coming into D&D. I think she had texted me a couple of weeks ago and was asking me about, you know, making a character and all that kind of stuff. So I completely geeked out, and you know, she had some friends at school who were interested, which I think is what finally kind of pushed her over. And I'm like, get their numbers, tell them to come. I'll order pizza. We'll get all the kids over here. I don't care.
I'll take care of them. Just let them.
But She's not following up, so I said to her, look, if we can't get anybody, I'll run you through just a solo thing, just kind of tell me what kind of character you want to play. I can craft something to go around it, right. And, you know, we'll just do it. Because, and that might actually even work better because, you know, because of the divorce and everything, I kind of have a relationship with her, like kind of like I have with my brother. You know, we fool around and, you know, we joke and, you know, whatever. And, you know, when it's time to be dad, it's time to be dad. But, you know, we can, you know, share that sort of camaraderie. And I think to get her first RPG experience in that sort of a safe environment with just like a one-on-one, I think will pay dividends for her down the road if that's something that, you know, she really is like, hey, I'm gonna play games and I want to get a group and I, you know, a whole thing. I think it'll give her a really strong base.
Yeah. Well, she'll know the vernacular. She'll be able to talk the talk and, like, understand when people are saying stuff. And it makes it not scary, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think she's always been uncomfortable with, you know, either trying to talk in character or, you know, say what, you know, she wants to do or, you know, whatever those trepidations are when you're looking at people sitting around a table like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
So I have fingers crossed maybe when we come back from vacation that we'll start to get something going. She didn't graduate, but school last day of school was today. So yeah. We have the rest of the summer now to kind of mess around with it.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, I agree. I'm looking forward to my son running one and playing.
And it's great. It's such a cool thing to be able to share that with your kids because when you're, you know, and we're about the same age, you know, you have a passion for this, you know, weird kind of, you know, sort of social thing, you know, and you know, kids now with the phones and all that stuff, to be able to kind of bring them into the fold, it's so rewarding.
I agree. Absolutely.
Awesome. I guess that's all we've got. I've got final five questions since you've been on before.
Okay. Shoot.
All right. Let me find my paper here. So are you a book or Kindle person?
Book.
Book? Book. Me too.
I like to hold it tactile.
Mm-hmm. Like to smell it.
Smell the ink.
Yeah, that's part of it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, definitely part of it.
The nice glossy RPG players' handbooks have a, you know, much different smell than the old musty library books as opposed to your, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I think it's our generation. It's like, yeah, the Kindle's nice and all, but if I'm getting an RPG book, I want a hard copy. I want to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Weird Wars, it's a World War I role-playing set in the where the Germans get into the occult. That's another one by Shane Hensley that I've gotten on Kickstarter. Should be coming any day now. I can't wait.
Cool. It's a Savage Worlds game, right?
Yeah, it's a Savage Worlds game.
Mm-hmm.
But Shane Hensley's the guy that did Deadlands. I don't know if you're familiar with that one or not.
Yep.
But he's had Weird War Vietnam, World War II. Now he's doing World War I. Oh, I love it. I love it.
I think I have the World War II book. I know I have the Explorer's handbook for that, but I've only ever played like once in a play by post. I haven't really gotten into Savage Worlds all too much.
Right.
This one's kind of odd. I'm stretching for questions here. Doctor Who or Monty Python?
Monty Python.
Okay.
I've never actually gotten into Doctor Who, but Monty Python I watch over and over.
I've never watched Doctor Who. My dad used to watch Monty Python, so I kind of grew up watching that.
Mm-hmm. Always look on the bright side of life. I mean, it doesn't get any funnier than that.
Look at the bones.
Yeah. Board games or RPGs?
God, if I could only have one, it would be RPGs.
You could say both.
You could.
It lasts forever. I can't explain it. Board games, you have fun, you lose them, you don't play them so much. But RPGs is like your imagination plugs in, so they can be anything you want.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So to follow up on that then, hack and slash or role play?
Role play.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I would rather lose and have a good story than to hack and slash your way through and win. I'm like, I'd rather have a beautiful death and have this great explanation And I've done it before. I ran a gnome barbarian, which is hysterical in itself. But he hated goblins, and we were like level 2. And 20 goblins came out of the woods, and he turned and charged them when everyone else ran. He ended up dying, but he took like 8 with him. And I was just like, well, that was a great death. That's what he would have done. He would have role-played it that way. Yeah, he wasn't about to let that go.
And they just left him all on his own, huh?
Well, they turned and kind of helped and shot a few arrows, but when they saw him just get swamped, they left him. I was like, that's okay, I'll make a new character. Everything's good. No problem. But he would not have walked away. He wouldn't have done it.
That's fair. And if you could be one supernatural creature, what would it be?
It would have to be a vampire, although I don't like the feeding on people, but there's just something about the vampires are romantic, you know, it has a mythos about it, right? That Victorian. Mm-hmm. My wife and I watch Penny Dreadful, and we love it. And it's always been the vampires that she likes the werewolves, I like the vampires, so...
That's cool. I didn't watch this past week's episode, but the end of last week, I was like, what?
When you found out about that one character, yeah.
It's like,
your jaw drops like, I can't believe.
Yeah, when I watch shows like that, I don't go in with, all right, I got to try to figure everything out. Like, I'm along for the ride. Like, that's my unplug and just kind of tune out. So I was so shocked.
Yeah. Well, she called Renfield. She saw the character at the beginning of an episode and said, he'd make a good Renfield. And sure enough, he became Renfield. And when I saw the other doctor, I said, he'd make a good Jekyll and Hyde. And that's who he became. So they're good. They have really good casting. I mean, and they pick people you don't know, so you don't have any preconceived notions.
Right. Yeah, I think, Billy Piper was on Doctor Who, at least for a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, she has a little bit more notoriety, but I think most of the other, well, and Malcolm, I mean, obviously, and everybody knows who he is, but, you know, other than that, I think they're mostly, you know, unknown, quote-unquote, so to speak.
That's right.
That's definitely a good show.
Yep. Yeah, it's great.
Billy Piper's actually going to be here at Phoenix Comic Con. I'm going to see if I can schedule some kind of an interview there.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, why not? You don't ask, it's an answer to no.
Well, that's it. That's always been our thing. It's all yes until it's no, so.
Yeah, it's usually no, but fuck him.
Well, that's true. It usually is no. Well, I tweeted to Mark Hamill this morning. He had tweeted something like, and I noticed the timestamp was like 14 minutes ago. I'm like, all right, fuck this. I'm like, hey, if you got an hour, come on the show. Like, I'll even dress up like the Joker. I don't care. Like, you know, I'll go out and buy a purple suit and fucking put some white face paint on.
There you go.
Have fun.
Literally get a load of me.
Yeah. But alas, no response.
Hey, but you try. Like I said, if you don't try, it's definitely a no.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to try.
Yep. We'll get him. I'll just keep harassing him.
That makes for a good anecdote.
Yeah.
That's right. Just keep up the harassment until the restraining order or you get a yes. One of the two.
Or blocked.
That'd be kind of, this follower has blocked you.
Well, I can always tweet them from my personal account.
There you go.
I noticed I can't tweet you from my other account.
There must be something wrong.
Oh, well. Such is life. All right, so hit us with all your details again. Let's get all that out there into the ether.
All right, the Kickstarter is Deviltry Station. There's about 15 days left, and we are hoping to raise $11,000. It's $24, and that includes free shipping to the U.S., and all the other shipping is $6 off. It's a team-based filler game, kind of icebreaker game is another word I've heard somebody use before. It's pretty casual. It's about rolling dice. You pick characters and stealing dice, and it's a lot of fun. Plays really fast. Everybody gets to roll dice, and you know, if you don't win, play another game. You can just keep going. It's not that much investment to try it again and keep going. So that's what people usually end up doing is they want to play one game, they end up playing three or four.
Mm-hmm. awesome. And then everything that's associated with the business is Dice Made Me Do It.
Dice Made Me Do It is the name of the company. That's our website, www.dicemademedoit.com. We're also on Facebook. We're also on Twitter, just under Dice Made Me Do It.
Awesome. And I'll launch into our details here in a second, but I want to thank you for coming on again. And
I want to thank you guys for forgiving me for my lapse. I owe you big time. So you just name and I'll deliver whatever it is I owe.
No, that's my fault because I should have sent a follow-up email, and you know I kind of dropped the ball on that too. So we'll share the blame.
Well, I'll take it all. God, I feel bad.
That's all right. We still got you in tonight, so we still got
to
chat and everything. So it's fantastic. Be able to sneak you in under the wire before I go away for a couple days. All right, I'll give all of our stuff here. You can find us at legendsoftabletop.com. Any questions, comments, feedback, you can reach out to us at legendsoftabletop@gmail.com. We're on all the social media, so you can check us out there. There's awesome BattleTech pictures on our Instagram. There's some pictures from Pine Top this past weekend, and there'll be pictures of the Grand Canyon coming up here in the next couple of days. Hopefully I have service out there.
Yeah, have a great trip.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Like I said, I have a half a suitcase full of bags I'm taking, or games taken. All right, let me start over. Probably edit this out. I have a half of a suitcase full of games that we're taking.
Who took them?
No, I'm taking them.
No, you're taking them.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Taking all of it. What? I think that's it. If you could leave us a no, I'm leaving that part in. If you leave us a review on iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated. That helps us out in the rankings there and helps to move us up the chain a little bit. So we would appreciate that. And thanks everybody for checking it out. And we'll catch you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.